Good afternoon. It is my privilege and honor to be here and have the opportunity to introduce our next speaker, Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture. Even though I'm the newest member, I think, of WGA, and this is my first meeting, I've already had several opportunities to have face-to-face discussions and get to know Brooke Rollins. I've been thoroughly impressed. And she has a big job to do, and I did want to take just the opportunity to tell a quick story, because it was shortly after I met her in D.C. a couple weeks later. We had a pretty significant issue in my part of the state where I grew up in western South Dakota with the Maud family, who were being indicted a young couple being indicted separately with federal charges of theft on BLM land. And I had brought that to the attention of my predecessor, Governor Noem, a year before, and she reached out to the previous Secretary of Ag and had no results. A year later, I did the same process with Brooke Rollins, sent her a letter, gave her a call, she returned the call, and I explained the situation, and she went immediately to work. And long story short, a few weeks after that, she called me up, wanted me to come to D.C., and she had a press conference to announce that all those charges had been dropped. And that was in a matter of just a couple-week period of time. So needless to say, I was very impressed. And so I look forward to having her up now. Secretary Rollins, are you?
I'm here.
Where are you at? There you are. Welcome, Secretary Rollins.
Oh, thank you. No, y'all don't need ever. Thank you, Governor. That's why we do what we do, right? To fight for the men and women who are sometimes voiceless and faceless and have been, and it's not Republican or Democrat. It is fighting for those that have no real chance of making their case. And when I found out about that, thanks to you and Christy and some others, it became so clear that a young farming fifth generation ranching couple from South Dakota who had used that 20 acres of about a million of forest land for the entire 100 plus years their family had been ranching, and that a nameless and faceless bureaucrat from the former USDA had arrived at their door in SWAT gear, threatened them each with 10 years in prison, told them that they had to find guardians for their children because their 6 and 8 year old were deemed to be raised by someone else, because they had arguably been grazing their cattle on, again, the same land that their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, and their great grandparents had used, was inexcusable. How could any of us sleep at night if that's happening in our country? And again, it's not blue or red or Republican or Democrat. That's just doing the right thing. So it was an honor to do it, and alongside you, Governor, and everybody, I want to thank y'all, and I want to thank the Western Governors Association and all my friends on the stage, again, from both sides of the aisle. It's been a remarkable few months leading the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but I had the incredible opportunity to be in the first Trump administration and ran several teams within the last West Wing in the 2018, 2019, 2020 period, and during that time got to work with several of the men, and I don't think I worked with you, Governor of New Mexico, but I look forward to it, but worked alongside so many governors. And before I move into my remarks, and we're making a big announcement today, from USDA and specific to our forest lands and wildfire. But before I do that, I'd just like to say that it really is such an honor. And those of you that have worked with me in the past and have been in a lot of the meetings that I've been sitting in and even talked on the phone or texted late at night, my heart and my belief in the American system of government is founded in our founders' vision of a republic where the governance that is closest to the people is the governance that is best. And under the 10th Amendment of our Constitution, that the states are the laboratories of democracy, and it is that and there and in those places where real innovation and real work gets done for the American people. So anytime I have a chance to work with our governors, I jump at it, and hopefully looking forward to doing a lot more over the next few years. But organizations like the Western Governors Association play such an incredible role in the alignment and in the bringing together and in the working together for ideas for the betterment of our country. So again, I'm such a joy to be here and so grateful. First, I want to take a minute, if I may, to acknowledge the fires, since we're talking about that today, that are affecting New Mexico residents specifically, including the Trout Fire, the Seven Springs Fire, the Rainbow Springs Fire, the Buck Fire, the Cotton Fire, and the Cotton 2 Fire. We are working with this incredible state in a joint effort to put out these fires as we monitor 19 large wildfires currently stretching into Arizona, into Utah, into Nevada, into Wyoming, and into Alaska. The National Multi-Agency Coordination Group has raised the National Wildland Fire Preparedness Level one step higher to Preparedness Level 3. We are also praying for the first responders who are bravely stepping forward and for the folks who are evacuated and concerned about their loved ones and their property, their communities, and their way of life. So we are on the case. Again, fires don't know Republican or Democrat or which side of the aisle you are on. And we have been really grateful to work alongside the governor here in New Mexico, who just hosted us for an incredible meal at the governor's mansion, but also alongside many, if not all, of the governors here today. A couple of quick top lines on what's happening in Washington, and then we'll get right into the newsworthy item. Many of you know that there is a big, beautiful bill making its way through Washington right now. Of course, those of us who are next to President Trump's side believe so strongly in the importance of this bill and extending and making permanent the largest tax cut for working and middle-class families in history. Also, we know that we have been hard at work with the president leading the way on renegotiating our imbalanced trade commitments on behalf of Americans, but specific to me, on behalf of our farmers and ranchers. Also, tirelessly working to broker peace around the world. And I think we have to say, since today is Monday, and just, I guess, less than 48 hours ago, we had some significant movement on the world stage. I'd like to say my family and I know many of you here have been praying for our president and our country as the decisions have been made and with which the American people have entrusted the president. The good news is that our man in the arena is the very best. I've worked alongside him for now almost 10 years. And the team that he has working, not the Secretary of Agriculture, but his national intelligence team, his foreign policy team, are literally second to none. And so as we see this moving out across the world and working to secure world peace, but through strength, I do think that all of us should take a moment, when appropriate, to pray for our president and our country, which I believe most everyone has probably already been doing. But the reality of governance is this, that we are not a single subject endeavor in Washington, D.C. While the president is focused on literally matters of war and peace, he demands rightly that we continue at full speed with the rest of agenda for our great country. And I know that's why we're all here today. From the plains of Texas to the forests of Idaho, your association here at WGA represents the best of what America has to offer. But for too long, the states represented here, especially those with large swaths of land administered by our U.S. Forest Service, have been inhibited from innovating because of burdensome regulations imposed by the federal government. I don't need to tell you all, but one out of every 2 acres in the West is owned by the federal government, nearly 650 million acres. This has a huge impact on so many communities, especially when the federal government ties its own hands with burdensome regulations and does not properly manage the land. One of the regulations that I have heard so much about, especially from our nation's foresters, is the Clinton-era 2001 roadless rule. Every year, nearly 100 million trees burn across our national forests, and about half of that land is off limits to common sense management. And that's all because of a regulation implemented almost a quarter century ago. With just 1 week left in his second term, President Clinton thought it was more important to lock up nearly 60 million acres of your national forests than to protect our communities, protect our drinking water, and protect our rural economies. Since this rule was implemented, we've seen the forestry industry decimated, we've seen communities burned, we've seen watersheds destroyed, and we've seen public access eliminated, all while so many jobs have been lost. These restrictions have impacted every single wildfire-prone state. In Montana, 40% of our national forest lands have been off limits to common sense management to prevent this tragedy. In Idaho, it is 45%. In Utah, it is 50%. And in Alaska's Tongass National Forest, the largest in the country, 91% has been taken off the table. This misguided rule prohibits the Forest Service from thinning and cutting trees to prevent wildfires. And when fires start, the rule limits our firefighters' access to quickly put them out. The roadless rule was supposed to protect your drinking water, but it failed. We have more than 3,800 municipal watersheds at risk, and the Forest Service has been shackled and unable to take action. This is water the American people depend on, and we have to actively manage the land around it. This rule was supposed to protect forests. It failed. 8 million acres of forests sanctioned by the roadless rule have burned, and the average acreage burned each year has doubled since the rule was promulgated 30 years ago. The rule was supposed to reduce maintenance costs of forest roads. Once again, it failed. As deferred maintenance of Forest Service roads have remained unchanged, the public have been locked out of lands, and our firefighters have been restricted from accessing fires quickly. Time and again, this Clinton-era policy has proven faulty and misguided. In this administration, we are taking a look under the hood of each and every regulation that affects the everyday lives of the American people. And this rule certainly affects the everyday lives of every single American living in the American West. That's why I'm excited to announce today here with you for the first time our intent to repeal the disastrous roadless rule. The heavy hand of Washington will no longer inhibit the management of our nation's forests. Under the leadership of President Trump, this administration knows timber production is critical to our nation's well-being. As the president said in his March executive order on the immediate expansion of American timber production, the United States has an abundance of timber resources that are more than adequate to meet our domestic timber production needs, but heavy-handed federal policies have prevented full utilization of these resources and made us reliant on foreign timber producers. After this executive order was signed, we got right to work, and the Forest Service launched a strategy to increase the annual timber volume offered by at least 25%, with the additional goal of selling 4 billion board feet annually by fiscal year 2028. The last time the Forest Service cut 4 billion board feet was over 30 years ago in 1993. This goal will mark a 38% increase over Biden-era harvest levels. So far this fiscal year, the Forest Service has sold almost 1.5 billion board feet of timber, already 9% ahead of volume sold at this time last year. Healthy forests require work, and right now we're facing a national forest emergency. We were proud to take swift action early in our tenure to declare an emergency on more than 110 million acres of our national forests. This declaration allows our incredible Forest Service team to move faster, treat more acres, get more logs on trucks, and reduce wildfire risk. Under this declaration, we have already authorized 10 projects, which will treat over 1.7 million acres, and additional 30 projects are soon to be announced. Our rural development team at USDA recently issued 2 loan guarantees under our timber production expansion program to save a small lumber mill in California and to support expanding mill infrastructure in Mississippi and Oklahoma. There's no doubt about it, we are continuing to be aggressive in our efforts to increase American timber production in line with President Trump's agenda. These actions are essential not just to revive our struggling forestry industry, but to save lives. The January wildfires in Los Angeles County were some of the most destructive in American history, which cost the lives of at least 30 Americans. Last year alone, wildfires destroyed 4,500 homes and other structures across America. Many of these episodes could have been avoided or at least diminished had the last administration properly managed our forests and given our firefighters the resources that they need to get their jobs done. Out of gratitude for the selfless service of our Forest Service firefighters, President Trump permanently increased the pay for our federal wildland firefighters. This long overdue reform provides financial stability for our nation's heroes and recognizes the immense sacrifices our firefighters and their families make. It also ensures we can recruit and retain the most capable and dedicated public servants to protect our nation from these devastating fires. Because firefighters are essential when wildfires start, we exempted these positions from the federal hiring pause and set an ambitious goal to have 11,300 wildland firefighters on board by mid-July, right before peak fire season. I'm excited to share that we have reached 96% of our hiring goal, far outpacing the rate of hiring and onboarding over the past 3 years and in the previous administration. By directing the Forest Service to cut red tape and focus on rapid onboarding, we are on track to meet and potentially exceed our firefighting hiring goals for 2025. Under the leadership of President Trump, it is a new day in America. I want to thank you all for your commitment to his agenda, our agenda, and for the time and energy each of you invest in securing an even brighter future for our great country. We are not even 6 months into what promises to be arguably one of the most transformative administrations of our lifetime. From the conversations I have had with our patriotic foresters and farmers and ranchers, and with many of you in this room, including all the great governors to my left up here on the stage, I can say with confidence that the best truly is yet to come. Again, I want to thank everyone. I know that was a lot of news in a very short time, but so look forward to talking to our governors and a conversation now for the next 15 or so minutes. I already talked to the press, so hopefully answered most of their questions, but working alongside and in partnership with you all over the next 3.5 years. Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Secretary Rawlins, and very good summary. We'll open up to questions. I'll start us out with a kind of a pump primer. Obviously, the state's represented here are very concerned about the Farm Bill, and so I just ask you for a perspective on that and your thoughts, what you see for priorities in the Farm Bill, and whether or not Congress is going to be able to get something across the finish line in the next few months.
Well, clearly the Farm Bill is really important. The last time that was passed was in the Trump administration. They had 2 big runs at it in the last administration and didn't get it across the finish line. The people that hurt the most from that are not those of us who serve in Washington, D.C., or even in your roles, but the farmers and ranchers who are working every day to supply the food, to supply the fiber, and to supply the fuel for this country. The good news is that, yes, I believe that a Farm Bill is imminent. It was one that I got the call for this job on a Saturday, driving to the Auburn-Texas A&M football game the Saturday before Thanksgiving. I think it was November 23rd, to be exact. President Trump called me about taking this specific position within his cabinet. And then within an hour, I had already had several conversations with some of our friends on the Hill about the importance of getting the Farm Bill across the finish line and how hopefully President Trump and our administration could make that happen. So that remains of paramount importance and priority. Clearly, the reconciliation bill, the one big, beautiful bill, is moving right now, and that's taking all of the energy in Washington. But having said that, a lot of what is important in the Farm Bill, such as reference prices, protecting our farmers, is actually part of the one big, beautiful bill. So we'll be able to check a lot of those boxes immediately through the reconciliation bill, but then whatever is left to do, we will make sure that with every ounce of energy I have and partners on the Hill and our White House, President Trump is committed to our farmers and our ranchers and will continue to be so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Questions?
Governor Cox.
Governor Cox, please.
Madam Secretary, thank you for that announcement. That's great news. We know that a couple states have been exempted from the roadless rule. I think Idaho and Colorado and
that's right.
Alaska. Utah's been trying for years, and so this is really big news. I want to thank you for the great work that the cooperation that we've had, the bipartisan cooperation with the shared stewardship. We've been doing projects. It started with an agreement under Trump 1. I so appreciate the Biden administration who renewed that agreement with us, where we're able to treat hundreds of thousands of acres, hopefully millions soon, of Forest Service land. This roadless rule exemption will help us there. I can just tell you, I just came off a fire. In fact, that's why I was late getting here. I was on a fire yesterday. Tragically, we had 13 homes destroyed. There had been a shared stewardship project with the about 6 or 7 years ago, and it saved an entire subdivision. We would have had 50 homes destroyed if we hadn't done this. And it was controversial when they did it.
Right.
People were mad when they saw us taking out trees and removing undergrowth, and everybody was pushing back. The environmental community was pushing back. And now they're begging for more of it, because what we're hearing from our foresters, the water's cleaner in those areas than anywhere else. The animals are coming back in those areas. A good forest is like a garden. You actually have to tend it and take care of it. And if we do this the right way, we can prevent fires and improve production. We can do all of this, and we've proven that. And so I'm grateful for that. I would just make a push for any additional funds that we can get into shared stewardship. Red states, blue states, these fires don't discriminate. And we've just got it. We've got millions and millions and millions of acres that need this right now. So just continue to advocate for that.
Thank you. Governor, thank you. And Utah has been really such a great model for this. In fact, my understanding is the real focus on shared stewardship started in Trump 1, but Biden and that USDA continued the work. So now it continues again back to Trump 2. And I think it hopefully goes to the larger concept that when we partner with the states, it's a much better program than when the federal government tries to do it ourselves. And I think we've seen that in Utah, I know in several of the other states on the stage. And I can't tell you how focused I am. And part of this announcement today is getting the decisions back to the states and out of Washington, D.C. And again, as I mentioned, this was our founder's vision. This was what our country was built on. The people of New Mexico deserve and have a better chance of real governance that is most responsible to them if the decisions are made here in this state versus from a long way away in Washington, D.C. The same with North Dakota, with Wyoming, with your state, Governor Cox and Governor Polis in Colorado, et cetera. So there is no bigger champion than I, as I mentioned, on these issues. And we are working around the clock. We are on phone calls all weekend, late at night. So just bring those ideas to us. And when you see it not working, let us know that as well. Thank you, sir.
Governor Polis.
Thank you. I just wanted to confirm on the roadless rule that the changes you're making don't affect the states that have the waivers, Idaho, Colorado specifically.
That's correct. I should have said that, Governor. It is Idaho and Colorado that all the states in 1994 were given the opportunity to carve out. And interestingly, Idaho and Colorado were the only two that did. And Senator Risch was very clear with me when I had my confirmation discussion with him that we needed to get hands off of Idaho because they are very happy with the way things are. So that's exactly right. It does not apply to your state.
Thank you, as are we. And the other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is you know, we're very concerned and see the impact from invasive species, particularly zebra mussel larvae. Now we're concerned about screwworm, New World screwworm in Central America. I just wanted to ask that when you get back to the office in D.C., elevate your staff, have them present to you on what they're doing about invasive species from USDA and their plan on that, because it's something that should be elevated, and any additional steps you can take to prevent species that could be disastrous for both agriculture as well as outdoor recreation, like zebra mussels. That's an important part of the federal role. You know, we talked about kind of turning things over to states. We like that. But USDA and imports and all that stuff, very important.
That's right. I was in South Texas 3 days ago and announced our 5-prong strategy to beat back the screwworm. It's a very significant plan. We're planning on almost immediately, we're opening a dispersal facility in America. Right now, all the facilities are down in Panama and South America to fight the New World screwworm, which, again, probably a lot of people in here aren't familiar with. But if it does reach America, the last time it was here was in the 1950s and 1960s. It decimated our livestock industry. So for those states like Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, and others that have a major cattle presence, it took 30 years to recover the last time it was here. So we've kept it at bay other than a short little issue in 2017 in Key West, Florida. It has been out of our country for now almost 40 years, but it began to make its way back toward the border. We got within about 700 miles of the Mexican border about 5 weeks ago. We shut down the ports, stopped all livestock coming in from Mexico. We are daily updating with our Mexican counterparts, but we've got to ensure that we're not just keeping it at bay, that we are eradicating it. So there's a lot more to come on that, but we are on top of it. The other one I will definitely look into. I'm not as familiar with that one.
Yeah, zebra mussels. And then,
the zebra mussels.
Yeah, I know they're tracking a number of others too, so maybe just have them present to you all the different ones they're tracking before they get to the point that, you know, screwworms are at, for instance.
Right.
We have a couple more. Governor Grissom.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Secretary. A couple of things. One, I feel a little bit bad about the characterization, because he's not here, of President Clinton. Climate change is the biggest problem in fuel and these damaging fires. And while this rule...
We may agree to disagree on that. That's a debate for another time.
No, it's a debate right here in this room. You're in New Mexico, and we're very clear about that. And we understand that states have the independence here and appreciate that. Your role here is to give us more independence, but we're pretty clear about that, and we want to be engaged so that we can do climate mitigation and forest health, resilience, and recovery. And in that regard, I'm grateful, and I would tell you that given that President Clinton is a huge climate change champion, he would be happy that we're doing mitigation, although I don't think I can quite speak for him. Two, some of the Farm Bill extensions were effective in making sure that we didn't lose ground, but I applaud getting a Farm Bill passed. And in particular in that regard, I'd love to know what your plans are for rural economic investments in states, because that is a major issue for the West, and certainly something that New Mexicans really rely on, including the amount of money that could be used for housing, which is, of course, my initiative as chair.
Well, first, I have to push back. And again, I know we're not here to debate, but in 1994, that rule was passed. And the very next year, the amount of fires that burned the forest doubled. The next year, it doubled again. The next year, it doubled again. And for 30 years, it's been doubling since we took that roadless rule out. So again, we can agree to disagree. I look forward to a longer
conversation. We can have a debate. I'm not as tall as you are, but I'll get up there and
but
do more.
But you're feisty, Governor. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and
like
I can
it.
Bring a bigger box. So there we go.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to concede that both are really bad for our forest. So.
I think that's what we ought to be doing. But in any event, I'd love to talk about the rural economic
development. On the rural economic thing, for me, there's so much that has to be done that, again, is not blue or red. And at the very top of my list is not bringing prosperity, but focusing on how we bring the American dream to every corner of our country, and specifically from this perch, every corner of rural America. And certainly in my world, it's farming and ranching and how we make sure that our farmers and ranchers and foresters are thriving and prosperous, and we're not losing all this land and not losing all these family farms, and we're not consolidating and being purchased by Brazil and China, et cetera. But it also how we lift up and support the rural communities. And it isn't just our farmers and ranchers, it's the housing crisis in rural communities. It is the food desert crisis in rural communities. It is the health crisis in rural communities. It isn't all of the above. And I think one of the great benefits of our cabinet, and you'll probably hear this if you haven't already, I know we've got Secretary McMahon, Education, Secretary Burgum, Interior, tomorrow Secretary DeRemer Chavez, Labor, tomorrow Secretary Zeldin, EPA. You've got quite a group of us kind of coming through town, but we all are working so closely together on all of this. And so very soon we'll be announcing a return of rural prosperity to every corner of America. And that will include a significant housing, healthcare, et cetera, piece. So stay tuned, and I really look forward to working with you on that. Thank you, Governor Grissom. Thank you. Thank you.
I believe we have
us.
Time. We'll get Governor Gordon, you have the final question.
Senator / governor. Yeah. Oh. I don't know if that's a promotion or not, but we'll just call it even.
Madam Secretary, great to have you here. And one of the things that I love about our Western governors is we are feisty and we do argue, and I think that's part of our essential character. I would also suggest, yesterday I was saying that this is also a forum about solutions. Mm-hmm. And managing our forests, the good neighbor authority, the shared stewardship, these are all incredibly important things. And here's the great part of that. Whether trees are dead and dying, they are either oxidizing very rapidly, like Governor Cox's recent fire exchange, yeah. or in this kind of arid climate, they take a little longer, but they still off-gas. So we both can agree, we all can agree, yeah. that better forest management is a great thing. I just wanted to come back to that focus. The question I guess I have, one of the things that Wyoming was able to establish around Yellowstone Park was an understanding and an agreement that the Forest Service would, and Department of Ag, would recognize the value of wildlife habitat, because those populations move in and out, you know. Your friend Greg Gianforte and I have talked mm-hmm. a lot about the migrations of these animals in and out. And that does affect grazing and all of those things. I hope we can continue that program mm-hmm. because it has grown, it's expanded, and I think it helps the American public understand that parks have to have connectivity with the lands around them, and that landowners adjacent to those play a large role in making sure those populations continue.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. And if there's anything we can do to ensure and preserve and even elevate that partnership, especially with the private landowners, that's what we're really hoping to do. Yeah, thank you.
Governor Armstrong, I think you're the only one I left out. So.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of Forest Service land, but North Dakota actually has a ton of production agriculture. I think we have like 5 trees total, and I'm not sure any are on federal land, so we can divert some of that everywhere else. But God bless your optimism on a farm bill getting done, because I was in D.C. for the last 6 years trying to get one done, so I appreciate that. But, I mean, as they're going through this in the reconciliation process and you hear about SNAP and the birdbath and everything else, I mean, we don't have corporate farming in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. Every single farm in North Dakota is a small business. So I would just say the best thing for our North Dakota ag producers is pass-through tax credits, small mm-hmm. business tax credits, a state tax credit. And I think sometimes with the way we do this stuff with D.C., with Democrats and Republicans, and everything amplifies to 1,000, those are all going to expire if we don't get this done.
That's
right. And that is incredibly detrimental to my North Dakota ag producers.
That's right. That it just underscores the importance of it. Well, listen, Governor, thank you for hosting me. Governors, Governor Roden, thank you for the great introduction. I'll look forward to working alongside everyone over the next few years. A big shout out to WGA for putting on a great meeting, and really, really thank everybody. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Secretary Rawlins. That was great update. I have to say, as a new governor and my first opportunity to moderate a meeting at the Western Governors Association, I was kind of panicked that I was about ready to lose control the first time. So I'm glad we got through that. We will take a 10-minute break, and again, one more round of applause for Secretary Rawlins. Thank you, Secretary.